Well, hello, good morning, it's Abbey 104 on Sunday morning. It's 11:05. And it's time for Folk Tales. I'm Terry Bennett, and in the studio today, I have Dave Doncaster, although Dave Diamond, some people know you as Dave, don't they?
Yeah, common misconception there.
Because Diamond is the name of the business, isn't it?
Diamond Images, yes.
And you are a photographer, we should say, straight up front, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I've tried to give it away with the word images after Diamond, but yeah, some people still ask me what it's all about.
And you're local, although you don't actually live in Sherborne, do you?
No, frequent the place quite often, but I'm really down at Poole, nearer to the seaside.
And tell us about the business, photography business, which you've built up, all sorts of photography?
Yeah, I mainly do product, food and event photography, but I've also been doing quite a bit of, a lot of people seem to want engagement photos now, and a lot of portraits come out of that as well, and pet photography. But my main is food and product photography, really.
And not weddings, I see your website says.
Yeah, no, not weddings.
Why is that?
Basically, as a, I have a little bit of respect for some of the wedding photographers, to be honest, because everybody who goes to a wedding seems to think they're a photographer and has their own little phone in their hand, and it's very difficult sometimes to get around, 50 people standing in front and you trying to get a decent shot. So
it can be frustrating.
Yeah. Can be.
So weddings are off the agenda, but just about anything else?
Just about anything else, yeah.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that in due course, and because you haven't always been a photographer, though, have you?
No, it's something that I've been doing as a solo job now for the last 3 years. Other than that, I used to do it as a sort of part-time basis through the businesses that I worked with. So.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about them in a moment, but let's get the whole thing underway with your first track. This is Billy Joel and Piano Man. Why do you want this one?
This is a memory, really, of my school days. I had a friend called Rob Baker, who we were very fortunate to meet up with a couple of years ago, again, which was rather nice. But he was a pianist, and he was studying to be a classical pianist. And every time I used to go over to see him in his house, because he was in a different house to me, he would always have this guy, Billy Joel, on, who I knew nothing about. And I sat down one day and he just had this Piano Man come on. And I just fell in love with the, not just the voice, but the way the guy played the piano. And Rob used to really bash his piano keys in a similar way. So it just reminds me of... my first
those
introduction
days.
Really to music.
Okay, here we go. It's Billy Joel and the Piano Man.
To his tonic and gin. He says, son, can you play me a memory? I'm not really sure how it goes, but it's sad and it's sweet and I complete when I wore a younger man's clothes. La 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 li, li, da. La la li, li, da, da, da. Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Sing us a song tonight. Got us feeling all right. Now John at the bar is a friend of mine. He gets me my drinks for free, and he's quick with a joke or to light up your smoke, but there's some place that he'd rather be. And the waitress is practicing politics as the businessmen slowly get stoned. the song tonight. Well, we're all in the mood for a melody, and you've got us feeling all right. It's a pretty good crowd for a Saturday, and the manager gives me a smile, 'cause he knows that it's me they've been coming to see, to forget about life for a while. And the piano, it sounds like a carnival, and the microphone smells like a beer, and they sit at the bar and put bread in my jar and say, man, what are you doing here?
Billy Joel there, and Piano Man. That's from 1973. That was his first ever single, apparently, and his first major hit. Well, it would be if it was his first single. Something of his signature song, I think it became. As chosen by Dave Doncaster, who's my guest in the studio today. And Dave, we've given a little bit of overview about what your current business is. Well, that's taking photographs.
Yep.
Apart from weddings. And but let's go back a bit. You were born Sussex somewhere, weren't you?
Yeah, Portsmouth Hospital. Yeah. Originally from West Wittering.
Okay.
Which is about 8 miles south of Chichester.
Right. And so early life around about there?
Early life, yep. Completely different, obviously, to what it is now. Less populated then than it is now.
Yeah.
Used to walk to school, used to walk to... the shops, used to walk everywhere, but nowadays it's not able to do so.
No. So West Wittering it was, and you attended primary school, presumably?
Yes, I attended primary school at the West Wittering Parochial Primary School there.
Oh, splendid. Mm.
Yes. I'm still not sure I actually understand the word parochial, but we'll run with that one. And then due to... something that happened in the school playground one day, overzealous. I then went to Burdham Primary mm-hmm. School for a short period of time,
right,
and then went back to West Wittering Primary School.
I see. Okay. Right. So reasonably happy school days, yeah.
Yeah.
On the whole.
Mm. Yeah.
But you moved on in due course to quite a prestigious school, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Christ Hospital in Horsham. Mm. Slightly different now. Buildings are obviously the same, but they've now got girls there. They brought the girls in a year after I left.
And that was a scholarship, was it?
Yes, I got a scholarship by the Oliver Whitby Foundation.
Okay, what are they?
They're a foundation in Chichester who basically they would fund two children to be able to go to the school per year. And I was, the year I got in, I was one of the two out of 2,000 that had...
Gosh.
Applied for it.
Oh, yeah.
So I was...
Quite an achievement, then.
Quite an achievement. Quite an intelligent little child at that stage. It's just the brain cells deteriorate as you get older.
And was that as a boarder? Or
yes, it was a boarder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very boarder.
What was that experience like?
Different. Mm. Very mm. different. It's amazing how much you remove yourself from family life when you're a boarder. And some of the kids that you're around become a sort of secondary family, and you do tend to spend some of your holidays with them rather than being with your own, to be honest. So, yeah, it does separate you slightly. But
I guess the argument for boarding education is you learn self-sufficiency and self-confidence at a much earlier age. Did you find that?
I was bullied for the first 2 years at school, and then learnt how to confront. And everybody deals with things in a different way. And I just felt that there was a moment that I needed to change the way things were going. And the only way that could be done was by myself. So I changed things slightly. Right. Life was a little bit different after that. Mm-hmm. You do get some good bonds with kids from that age, like you do if you're not a boarder, you know, but it just depends on how you further that later on.
So overall, a positive experience?
Yeah, I think if I had the chance to do it all again, I'd study a lot more. And I'd make sure I came away with a lot more so that it was more beneficial to me.
Well, I was going to ask you, academically, how were you?
Yeah, academically, I was far better when I went into the exam than I was when I came out.
I just have to think about that for a moment.
Oh, I knew all the answers before I read the questions.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I was more of a sporty person. So a lot of my time was taken up with the sports side of it more than the educational side, to be honest.
And what about the sports, and what was your strengths in that direction?
I played, as many people seem to tell me all the time, oh, you look like a rugby player. Yes, I used to play rugby. And I played football and cricket were my main favourite sports, really.
And a good sporting tradition, presumably, at a school like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very fortunate in the fact that I've played at some of the top venues in this country due to my school, basically. Didn't have the ability to do it after I left school, but took the opportunity whilst I was at school, which is good.
Great, absolutely. And any sense then of where your future direction was going? I mean, photography is a very late in life thing for you, isn't it? But was there any interest at that point?
No, none whatsoever. I just wanted to do sport. That was all I wanted to do. I sort of, when I was at school, my main priority was I wanted to study law because I was going to, my intention was to go into the police force. But I was shattered because my chest was half an inch too small, which I believe now my chest would probably be about 13 inches too big. It's amazing how life changes.
Okay, so that really was the ambition in those days,
yes.
The police force.
Yeah, I wanted to go into the police force, which is a completely different idea now because I, you know, a lot of respect for the police and what they deal with nowadays because you just don't know what's going to happen nowadays, whereas when I was first wanting to be in there, it was a completely different kettle of fish, really.
Hmm. What drove that ambition? Didn't it? Was no family background in that direction or anything? Though?
No, my family, basically the men went in the Navy one way or another. It was either Merchant Navy or Royal Navy. Hmm. But we had a guy called Ron Chase, who was the police officer at the end of our road. That was in the days when you had a local bobby. And we used to be a little bit scared of him. And I guess out of that scaredness, it was more respect, actually. Because as you grow older, you realise that some things that you think are something when you're younger actually turn into something different when you're older. And I think we were wary of the fact that this guy was always good and we weren't necessarily in that same category. So I just wanted to be more good, I suppose.
Mm, okay. But that idea faded because your chest size wasn't big.
That was the start.
It's a really strange reason.
Yeah, that was the downfall.
So you got to the point where, you know, you were about to leave Christ Hospital. So what was the game plan then?
I didn't really have a game plan. I didn't know whether I was going to stay on to do further education or not, or whether I was going to go into the life journey and gain experience. And I think, you know, you have the choice of doing one or the other. And I just chose, right, I was going to go out there and get a bit of life experience. And doors opened for me to go into the licensing trade up in London. So I took it.
Okay. Well, that's probably a convenient moment to take your next track, which is by Blondie. Tell us about this one.
Well, you have to realise this was in the late 70s and I was a teenager and I was male. And I don't know that there was any lad of my similar age that didn't like Blondie. Debbie Harry, but yeah, Blondie. And this was one of my favourite tracks of theirs.
Okay. Well, it's Hanging on the Telephone by Blondie.
I'm in the phone booth. It's a one across the hall. If you don't answer, I'll just ring it off the wall. I know he's there, but I just try to crawl. Don't leave me hanging on the telephone. Don't leave me hanging on the telephone. I heard your mother, now she's going out the door. Did she go to work or just go to the store? All those things she said I told you to ignore.
Blondie there, and Hanging on the Telephone from 1978, written by Jack Lee, first performed by his short-lived US West Coast power pop band, The Nerves. Never heard of them. Got to number five with Blondie in, as I say, 1978. And that's chosen by Dave Doncaster, or Diamond Dave, as some people know him. And he's my guest on Folk Tales this morning. Dave, we've been talking about your early life and your time at Christ Hospital in, where was that, Horsham, wasn't it?
Horsham, yeah.
Which was quite a positive thing for you, but you eventually left and had to decide which way to go. You decided not to go into further education, but to go and get some life experience. So what happened next?
I went to where the roads are all paved with gold.
Yeah, that might be London, is it?
Yeah. I headed where Dick Whittington went to. I ended up. It was my stepfather who was running one of the pubs in London for Sam Smith's. Sam Smith's Brewery had come down from Tadcaster in Yorkshire and taken over some Trust House 40 Hennecke bars in London. Which was quite big for London at that time because it was a good old established brewery. Canberra were very interested because it was all real ale in old wooden casks.
So campaign for real ale or something.
Campaign for real ale, yeah. So he was manager of one of the pubs and I came in and sort of helped him. He taught me the trade. And then I moved between the five pubs that they had, which was rather nice actually.
And this is in the 80s, presumably.
Yes, yes. Right as I was legally aged to be able to do so.
Okay.
Yes.
So you were a barman initially, but then you sort of went up to manager of a pub or something.
I was assistant manager of the Lyceum Tavern in the Strand, which was actually quite interesting because we were selling my photos at Bovington Tank Museum the year before, at their vintage Christmas. And this woman came up to me and looked at one of the photos and she said, I used to live there. And it was a photo that I'd taken outside the Savoy of one of the old number 15 Route Masters with one of the new number 15 Route Masters behind it. And she said she used to live there. And I said, well, where did you live? Because not many people lived in that area. And she said, over the other side, above a pub. So I said, well, there's only two pubs there. There's the Lyceum Tavern or the Wellington. She said, yeah, the Lyceum Tavern. And talking to her a little bit longer, I found out that actually she was the daughter of the landlord. Oh. So my manager, she was his daughter. And the last time I'd seen her, she was, I think, 3 or 4.
Oh, well, she used to go.
Yeah, so that was quite weird and age-confirming. Really?
These things often crop up in life.
Yeah, yeah.
We could do a whole programme on Routemaster buses, but we mustn't.
No.
We'll move on to something else. So did you stay in London in the licensing trade?
No, I unfortunately suffered from meningitis in my late teens. I went into St Bart's Hospital. Thank you very much, St Bart's, by the way. I went into there weighing round about 14 stone and 3 months later came out weighing 7.5.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. That hit you pretty hard.
Yeah, very much so. I still struggle in some parts of my life with my back. The lumbar puncture that I was given wasn't a brilliant one, and I still get a few headaches. But other than that, you know, I came out okay, so...
It's a pretty serious condition, isn't it? Particularly,
it was
age.
Then. Mm. Then they flew in an American consultant, and I was told the difference between meningitis and cellangitis. And I remember still having a little bit of a sense of humour and asking him, "Could I please have meningitis rather than cellangitis?" He said he'd never diagnosed anybody with cellangitis, and then somebody in the ward one down from me died of it whilst he was there. So that was, yeah.
It was a sobering thing.
It was a bit frightening to myself as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So you bounced back, obviously, after that.
Well, I came back down to... I lived with my mum when she moved. She moved from West Wittering to Chichester, and I came back and recuperated. Not quite on the south coast, but...
Near it.
Near as, damn it, yeah. Mm.
But the licensing trade wasn't to remain forever, was it? That was really basically the 80s you spent in that.
Yeah.
But then you got itchy feet, did you?
Yeah, the licensing trade changed, and I suppose I changed with it as well. And I just got more sort of, I don't know, I suppose I became a bit more wanting to know more things on different things. So I went into the manufacturing side. I got offered a job at what was then Rosemount, and it's since now been called Fisher Rosemount. And everything that I've learnt on the production side and business side purely goes back to working for them in the early 90s. They were well ahead of their time. We were doing video conferences at about 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon with the American part of the company, and we were having to really slowly put a product in front of the screen because otherwise it would just blur as it was moving. Nowadays technology's far better,
sure.
But if you look back to 1990-91, having video conference then, you know, that was very,
yeah, that was state of the art in,
yeah,
those days,
yeah. Yeah, very much so,
yeah. So early days in manufacturing, sort of learning the trade, as it were.
Yeah, I wanted to learn the processes.
Yeah,
it was the processes that I was interested in, how you got what you got and how you consistently got what you got.
What took you into that from licensing? Just an inquiring mind?
Licensing, you stand one side of the bar and you yeah, it's great if you want to listen to everybody's life tales. As you well know with folk tales, but I'm sitting here and I'm stone cold sober, and sometimes listening to people's folk tales from the other side when they're not, yeah, it's slightly depressing sometimes. So yeah, I just wanted to do different things.
So where did that take you then, from having learnt quite a bit about how to make things and how it all goes? What happened next after that?
Well, I stayed in manufacturing, but I went through a few companies, worked with the body shop, not the car replacement
no,
bit.
This is the retailer.
This is the retailer, the perfume person. That was down in Littlehampton. And a few other places here and there. And just basically learnt processes of manufacturing, and just I wanted to learn how to improve people's processes. So I wanted to go to places where there was many different types of processes and see how things could change other people, which is where in later life I went into a business consultancy. And one of the strengths of that was going in there and looking at how people were doing what they were doing and then just making suggestions to tweak it and improve the efficiency and process, really.
And you gained all of that knowledge through a number of different fields. You mentioned the body shop. You were something to do with fire extinguishers as well. And
oh, Chubb.
Gas
yeah,
products.
Chubb,
and
Chubb Fire Security, yes. Yes, I'm very proud. I used to make the handles on fire extinguishers. But I didn't make the pin that used to put them together.
Well, there are a couple lurking around the corner there. Do they look familiar?
Oh, they take me back.
I should say to listen to Davies, you're getting very, very reminiscent looking at two rather ordinary fire extinguishers here in the studio.
Well, I must admit, Taff said previously to watch out for the and hide the biscuits. Well, maybe he needs to hide the fire extinguishers because there may be one missing by the time I leave.
Something of a fetish, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, let's move on. Because, again, you didn't stay within that field, did you? You then branched out again into finance system, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that was a complete upheaval because at the time I was still down south. I was in the Littlehampton, Bognor and Chichester area. And then a friend of mine in Manchester suggested that Manchester was now the place to be. So I'd paved my way with the golden streets of London, had then gone down to the wetter outbacks of the West Sussex area. And then I thought, well, I'm used to the wet. Why don't I actually take a move up to Manchester?
It's properly wet up there.
It's properly. Yeah, it was properly wet. Yeah, I mean, I think I wore my shorts for 5 days of the year, and now I probably don't wear my shorts for 5 days of the year. Slight different. So I was given the option of having somewhere to stay, which is always a handy thing to have in the background.
Sure.
And I resigned from my job at the body shop, and they put me on gardening leave, which meant I couldn't work for anybody for, I think it was 3 months. And at that particular time, the World Cup was on. So I spent the time of the World Cup saying goodbye to people down south during working hours, which was rather nice.
Getting paid for it.
Getting paid for it. Yeah, so thank you very much to... It was actually Cozy I worked for, not the body shop. Cozy were the creative outsourcing company that manufactured all the stuff for the body shop. But, yeah, big shout out to Cozy. Thank you very much for
the
beers, the burgers, and a lot of sausages that went down through that summer. Thank you very much.
I'm bound to ask, why finance, though? I mean, complete change from what you've been doing.
That was never an option. When I went up to Manchester, I had no idea what I was going to do.
I see. Move first, then find something to do.
Yeah, and I had the pay for 3 months, which was actually ideal. So I, first of all, temped at the Inland Revenue. Well, yeah, that was an exciting job.
I sent you maybe... being sarcastic or not.
What? Me? Yes, sarcasm to the full. That was yeah, okay. that was enlightening.
Wasn't the most thrilling experience than working for the HMRC?
No. Okay. No. And I knew there had to be better things than that.
And indeed there was, which you moved on to.
Well, I just changed the four letters. So instead of working for the HMRC, I then ended up working for HBOS.
Yes. That's Halifax Bank of Scotland,
Halifax
as it was.
Bank of Scotland, yes.
And what were you doing there?
Well, I started doing an admin side of things as a temp, closing down mortgages, finishing off, and then went to their B2B side, which was looking at putting mortgages to approved status with mortgage advisors. that, so it was another exciting job.
Yeah. Yes.
But again, I was learning the processes of how they were doing things. So it was a continuation of what I'd learned in the manufacturing side. I was looking at the processes on the admin side with big financial institutions like that.
Which, again, may later come into your role as a business consultant. I'm sure that was useful.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very much so, because I left HBOS just before the crash to go to a actual mortgage advisor. So I went to the other side of the fence. So instead of dealing with the mortgages and approving them, I was now going to the other side of the fence, trying to train the mortgage advisors on how to actually do the applications so that you can spend less time and get them approved quicker, which was great for the mortgage advisor that I was working for. And then I went back to working for, I went to the Manchester Building Society, who had created a mortgage broking service. So they had a network of mortgage advisors and insurance advisors. And I went on board there to bring them on board. So, I sort of went to the three different angle faces of the finance industry, really.
Yeah, absolutely. But eventually that all came to an end. And was that when you set up your own consultancy?
That was after the 2008
crash.
Was it 2008?
It was, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it feels so much like yesterday.
10 years ago.
10 years ago now. Wow. Yeah, we've still all got less in our pocket, haven't we? So it was after that that the managing director of the business that I worked with at the Manchester Building Society, he was made redundant, I was made redundant, and we both started up the business together. He was a great salesperson, so he could go and knock on the door, and I was the guy that was creating the databases and everything and filling out that side of it.
Analysis side of it.
Yeah, so we used to go into businesses, look at what they were doing, mainly on the financial side of things, because that was what we were up to date with there and then, and could help them make their process a bit more efficient.
And this is still based in Manchester?
That was based in Manchester, Okay. Yeah.
But not too long after that, you moved south again, didn't you?
Yeah, the pool. It brought me back. It was the water. I wanted to see the water that I could walk on, not the water that came out of the sky too much.
You ended up back in London anyway.
Yeah, I wanted the sunshine. But, I got as far as London.
And this time it was the NHS, wasn't it?
Yeah, NHS. NHS. It's a wonderful institution. I think everybody at some stage should work in the NHS to understand what it's like to work in the NHS, because it's a complete different environment. And there's a lot of good people that work in the NHS, and they do a good job.
And you were still a business consultant, or hold for a while, or what?
I think my interview went really well because of the business consultancy, because I basically said these are the things that I could do, and this was something completely different to the position I was going for, because the position I was going for to get into the NHS in London, this was working at... bringing me back, actually, a full circle, because the interview was actually at St Bart's.
Okay.
So, really weird, because I walked through the same front door that I last came out of after suffering from meningitis many, many moons before.
Yeah.
So I went in healthy this time. Or, well, some would say healthier slightly. I went for the interview there, and it was for a domestic supervisor. So I was one of the first that had come in. This was through Carillion. Sorry. Yes, had to mention that name. Carillion were doing the PFI for St Bart's, and
it's the private finance initiative, as it was quite big in those days, wasn't it?
Yes. Previously all the supervisors and management had come up through the grades. So, you know, one minute a cleaner is a cleaner and the next minute he's a supervisor. So I was the first person really that they brought me in as a supervisor with supervisory skills. So it, It was a completely different ball game, really.
All right. Look, time is marching on, so we want to talk, obviously, about your current business in a bit more detail. So let's take your next track. This time it's David Bowie and Mick Jagger. Tell us about this.
Oh, memories of my 21st. And this didn't help my back, actually, this record, because I had my 21st in Bognor Regis, and friends of mine at that time decided that they liked the fact that I liked this record, or should I say they were forced to like this record because I liked this record so much, and they gave me a whole, I think it's a 45 tape with this record just continually played on all on one side. Yeah, yeah. And they did this on my birthday night where we had the party. And they gave me the bumps out in the street through the whole of one of these records. So if I get fidgety whilst you're playing this, you know why.
I think you're safe here. It's Dancing in the Street, David Bowie and Mick Jagger.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America.
David Bowie and Mick Jagger, Dancing in the Street, from 1985, as chosen by my guest in the studio today, Diamond Dave, or Dave Doncaster, who's a local photographer. Dave, we've got to the point where you were working for the NHS in London, but you upped sticks and moved to this part of the world. How did that come about?
That was down to a young lady that I met, and she enticed me down this way.
She led you astray, did she?
She led me astray, yes.
Has to be said that that young lady is sat over in the corner of the studio right at the moment.
Yes, and it also has to be said that she hasn't put her phone down from taking photographs and videoing this all the way through. As many of her members of her family will know, that is something she does all the time.
Anyway, yeah, this is Donna, of course, we're referring to.
Yes, we are. My better half.
Mm, okay. And that was the catalyst to you moving from London down to Poole.
Yeah, I mean, there came a time where it was a case of I was either going to be missing Donna more during the week than I was my job, or would I miss my job more if I was down with Donna? So she definitely won that argument quite easily.
She's smiling. Good. All right, so you decided to move from London to Poole.
Yeah. I would like to stress, though, the job I had, I thoroughly enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. This is the NHS.
Yeah, it was a very, very enjoyable job. So it wasn't a case that I moved down here just because I didn't like my job.
No.
If there was a way that I could have managed both, then that would have been ideal. But I didn't really want Donna coming into the world of London, because it was changing rapidly up there. It was not not a very nice place in some of the areas that I was having to frequent, really.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a better option to come down.
So pool it was. So you'd resigned from the job. So you came down here really without a job.
Yep.
So this is where the photography started coming in, wasn't it?
Well, the photography started when I was running the business consultancy, really. Well, actually, no, it goes back further than that, because my granddad, who was a fantastic gentleman, but wouldn't be called that nowadays. I think he'd be called a sexist and probably a racist, I'm afraid to say, but that was the way that they were in those days. But he was a nice man. If I die one-tenth of a man that he is, I'd be happy. But he was terrible at taking the family photographs when we went on holiday. And I was the one that used to go and take the films to Boots to get them developed. And I would always laugh bringing them back because there was never any of us. There might have been the leg of a woman on the beach, or the head of a woman not member of our family, or the back end of a donkey that you couldn't get to see all of it. So, yeah, and in those days, obviously, you paid for how many photos you had, absolutely. And you were limited. So
it wasn't cheap, either.
So somebody had to take up the reins of doing the photographs and getting a bit more of a record on it. But then, of course, when I did the business consultancy, one of the things was I found with a lot of businesses that they didn't do much photographs. And a website, if you've got a website, that's your window.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
You know, I mean, you need to show good of your good. So if you're doing something you believe in, show that to others, because they've only got a second. You've had it since you started it, you know, so you're naturally gonna like it. It's a bit like a child, you know, your child's the best on the planet, but others, it depends on how they first see that child. So just think of that and make sure your websites have got decent photographs on that everybody can see them in a clear state.
So you'd identified the need, if you like, for a more, a corporate photography angle there, really.
Yeah, so part of the package in the business consultancy was that I could take digital photographs for them and include it in the package, and quite a few of them took it up. So,
how did you, though, go from a position where you had no real background in that to creating a business where you make money out of taking photographs?
That's a good question.
Do you have an answer?
I suppose it was just like everything, isn't it? You find your market. If there's something that you enjoy doing and you want to do it, don't not do it. And find other people that like what you're doing. I've been very lucky that people that I've worked for and with are nice people. I can say that hand on heart. I've, you know, some of the clients that I've worked for and done photographs for, I'm proud to say I work for them and with them.
You obviously had some contacts, and were you still doing the business consultancy side of it alongside when you moved
I've
down
I've done
this
that
way?
With some recently, actually, over the last sort of year and a half. There's been a few businesses where I've sort of given my slant on business advice, especially for startups, I've had obviously good feedback from that, so that's nice.
You started then building up a bit of a business as a photographer, and it's presumably mushroomed because you do it full time now, don't you?
Yes, I've lessened over the last sort of 12 months due to slight ill health, and I've got a bit of a knee problem which limits my event photography, especially because I can't run around anymore. Not that I ran around before, some would say I rolled around, but I can't do the running too much now, so it's a lot easier to do product and food photography.
And is that the staple now of what you're doing? Again, I'm using the word corporate-based rather than a high street photographer, or is that not a fair...
The majority of it is local producers. I also do some events outside of the county. Did quite a few of those last year, which was nice because Donna and I went away for sort of like a weekend and did an event. We also enjoyed... We went abroad we went to the Isle of Wight. So, yeah, we didn't need passports for that, mind you. And we didn't see the guy at the ferry terminal doing his dance. But, yeah, we enjoyed it. It was nice. Went over there to do some photography for someone and enjoyed an extra day as well on the island. So
it's a mix then that you're involved in.
Very diverse.
Yeah, lots of things for businesses, but equally you go out and you mentioned engagements and family photographs. Yes. And what else did I find on your website? Food and people and events was...
You were the one on the website.
Yes,
this week.
You got one hit, definitely. Yeah.
I thought it said it was from Sao Paulo. Okay.
But it's that type of business that you now have.
Yes. I mean, if anybody needs anything done as a photograph, then, you know, get in contact. I mean, I can pretty much put my hand to any... And it's not a case of I prefer doing something rather than something else. It's just that's really where I seem to have fallen into more than any other angles, really.
The photographs on the website are superb, and you would expect that you would put some good photographs on your website, obviously. But no, they're great.
After preaching to others to make sure they put,
absolutely. Yeah. But and so much more interesting that you haven't ever trained as a photographer as such, have you?
No.
This is just something that you've built up over the years.
Yeah, it's something that, as I would say to anybody, like I said earlier on, you know, if it's something you want to do, find out how to do it and go and do it. Today you have so much opportunity to do anything you want to do. So I would say to anybody and everybody, don't just sit there thinking about it. The only worry you need is that you didn't bother to try. So what if you fail? You tried. You know, and that's, to me, that's all that matters.
Definitely. Time is against us, but we're going to fit a little bit of your penultimate track in, and then we'll just talk a little bit more about the business, where it's going, and also the new side of it. This is R. Kelly, so tell us about this.
Oh, my... Well, if anybody really knows me, they know that I like golf, and I used to like golf very, very much indeed. I was a member of two golf courses at the same time, and I used to play golf all the time. And I... This is a while back now... I won a golf competition, nothing major, but it was a golf competition, and it was down in Kent. It was with Golf World magazine or whatever. And as I was coming back, I was so elated that I was parked at a set of traffic lights, and this came on the radio, and I did the moment of like, what was it, the two lads. Yeah, no, I can't think of that one now. Where you're in the car and they were headbanging. I can't remember. Okay. But I was doing that to this, and it was... I didn't realise that there was about four or five cars beside me absolutely in stitches. And I didn't care. I just unwound the window and I just went, I won. And that was it. All the way home, I was just smiling and remembering this.
It's a great way to remember it. I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly.
I'm leaning on the everlasting arms. If I can see it, then I can do it. If I just believe it, there's nothing to it. I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky. Think about it every night and day. Spread my wings and fly away. I believe I can soar. I see me running through that open door. I believe I can fly. I believe I can fly. I believe I can fly. I was on the verge of breaking down. Sometimes silence can seem so loud. There are miracles in life I must achieve, but first first. I know it starts inside of me. Oh, oh, if I can see it, then I can be it. If I just believe it, there's nothing to it. I believe I can fly.
That's R. Kelly, I Believe I Can Fly, from 1996, for a soundtrack from the film Space Jam, I Believe. I didn't see it. Maybe you did, Dave, did you?
No. Simple answer.
Right, okay. I was hoping you were going to give me another story off the back of that, but no. Okay. Dave Doncaster has been my guest in the studio today on Folk Tales. And Dave, we've got pretty up to date. We've talked about your photography business as it now exists. But there's a new bit of it just come about, isn't there? There's something called Layers.
Yes, Layers. It's that's with a local chef to here. He's just over the border. Steve James from Steve James Catering Limited. He and I have teamed up to do food development. So what basically it is any food producer that has a product that we believe we can add another layer to. So just take for argument's sake, if somebody's got a jam, we might be able to turn it into a Victoria sponge. That's a simple way of looking sure. at it. But we can create additional recipes, so we could make something further of it and supply you with a recipe, method, ingredients and decent photographs of that end product.
I see, okay. And so you're working with him, an established, quite notable chef.
Yep.
He's doing the cookery side of it.
He does a hard bit.
Yes, and then you do the images.
I do the easier bit.
Do you ever think of swapping roles?
Mm-hmm. No, he's very, very good at what he does. Let's put it that way. He's got a very artistic mind as well, which is very beneficial in this.
Okay, and that's relatively early in its development so far?
Yes, we are at this present moment in time. It's actually next week we're going to be doing the first lot of the photographs and constructions of everything. So hopefully within 2-3 weeks people will get to see some of our first bits of work.
Lovely. Tell us about the Holness Country Fair as well, because that's another involvement of yours.
Well, the Holness Country Fair I got involved with last year on the committee. James from Rylands Farm, Future Roots, with Julie, they have the Holness Country Fair, which helps raise funds for Future Roots. And I did the photography for them 2 years ago. And I liked the event that much. I said to James, look, I would really like to be involved. If you want my help, give me a shout. He gave me a shout. So I went on the committee last year and we upped it slightly to what it was previously. James has told me that they tripled the amount of people last year to what was there previously. So overall, they were very happy. And the biggest thing that happened out of it was that a lot more people got to find out about Future Roots and also the countrymen that are there as well.
Julie's been a guest on this programme. It's fascinating the work that she does out there with children and the older folk as well.
Yes, it's very fascinating what Julie does. It amazes me. I don't know how she fits all that time in because she's always, always on it. Yeah. You know, even if she's sitting eating a sausage sandwich, she's still thinking about what she's going to be doing next.
So the Holness Country Fair is a strong event, although it's not happening this year, I believe.
No. What basically happened this year was, well, last year, actually, we had the four fields, the two fields which belonged to Rylands Farm, and the two further fields up were the car park. And the decision was made that we were going to try and bring it all into the two fields down below. But the two fields down below slightly flood because of the up and downness of the field. So this year what they wanted to do was put in some drainage so that they could develop the field a bit more for the future events. So 2019 will go ahead, and the dates that we've provisionally done at this present moment in time is the 14th and 15th of September for next year. So yes, that's an exclusive
for Abbey 104.
Abbey 104 were there last year, and it was an excellent event, I have to say. And
it's where we met.
Yes, it was, yes. Actually, wasn't it? Yes, indeed. So I look forward to next year's, which will be great. You're also involved with something called Venfest, aren't you?
Yes, Venfest, formerly known as the Dorset Food and Venison Festival, which is can't call it a charity yet, but that's what they're intending on becoming. They raise funds for the Upton and Litchett Minster area projects. And it's been going for 5 years. Two of them, unfortunately, had to be cancelled because they were earlier in the year and weather, as we all know in this country. But this year it's on Saturday, the 5th of May, and that's at Post Green, Litchett Minster. We've got over 50 traders there, with some charity stalls, entertainment.
This is quite a big event, then.
It is, yes. Last year they had 2,500 people through the gate. We're hoping for an increase of that to around about the 3,000. I came on board this year to help with that as well. It'll be interesting to see how that goes, and it's only in a few weeks now.
Absolutely. Dave, we've pretty much run out of time. We've gone a couple of minutes over, which doesn't matter too much. But we're going to draw it to a close. How does Dave relax away from taking photographs and doing everything else that you're involved
in? I nick people's biscuits.
Yeah, well, you've
so
done
taff,
that. You've
beware,
done that here.
Because I've only taken a couple of Jaffa cakes at the moment, but I know where the tin is.
But besides that, any hobbies?
Golf.
Because you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, golf. My best mate and I have played golf for, well, my best mate Nick, who was my manager in 1990 when I went into the manufacturing game, and we've been friends ever since. We're off on a holiday in October this year because it's celebrating Donna's birthday. So we're taking her over to Portugal so that we can have a golfing holiday. Yeah, that was Donna in the background laughing at that.
Does Donna play golf?
No, Donna doesn't play golf.
Okay, right. That'd be a real treat for her then.
Yeah, but we've gone to a place that has a spa and swimming pools and an alcoholic refreshment area.
Yeah, she is smiling. Dave, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. We wish the business heirs. That's Diamond Images. And also the new one called Layers. We wish you well with both of those, and you
thank
personally.
You.
And thank you for coming in.
It's been a pleasure.
What's your final track?
I'm just putting my glasses on now for those who don't have a telly seeing me. My last track is when Donna and I got together, the first day that we spent together, this track came on the radio, it came on the television. I think there was a van going past that played it as well. So this has always been definitely a reminder of our first moment together. And I believe it's her ringtone on her phone when I ring her.
Well, it's Bruno Mars and the Lazy Song from 2011. Dave, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Today I don't feel like doing anything. I just wanna lay in my bed. Don't feel like picking up my phone, so leave a message at the tone. Cause today I swear I'm not doing anything. I'm gonna kick my feet up, then stare at the fan. Turn the TV on, throw my hand in my pants. Nobody's gonna tell me I can't. Nah, I'll be lounging on the couch, just chilling in my Snuggie. Click to MTV so they can teach me how to Dougie. Cause in my castle, I'm the freaking man. Oh, yes, I said it. Nothing. next, meet a really nice girl, have some really nice sex, and she's gonna scream out, this is great.
Oh my god, this is great.
Yeah, I might mess around and get my college degree. I bet my old man will be so proud of me. But sorry, pops, you'll just have to wait. Oh. Cause today I swear I'm not doing anything.